He went out for a drink and some conviviality, Moxie said. Conviviality, he calls it. Damn. What time is it? Stop asking that question in Key West. Is it possible to get a drink in Key West at this hour? Are you kidding? I guess it's early yet anyway. I thought you were putting Freddy to bed a little early. Damn, damn, Fletch said. Damn, damn, damn. Nice line, Moxie said. Up there with oh, 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 oh. What's the matter with Freddy going out for a drink? Can't keep him in anyway. In case it hadn't dawned on you, O Luminous Two, I was trying to keep your presence in Key West a deep, dark secret. Oh, she said. The minute Freddy's famous face hits the light of any bar, up goes the telephone receiver to the press. Of course, she said. Freddy here, Moxie here. Simple equation. From the bed, she said, nice try, sport. Best laid plans and all that. Damn. Damn, she said, looking at him as he stood in the middle of the room. I think you have an American build. Yeah, he said, I was made in the USA. Chapter 11. So how come, Moxie asked very early in the morning in the bright kitchen, you get to borrow such a nice big house in Key West at a moment's notice? Frederick Mooney was asleep in his room. Fletch had checked. It belongs to someone I do business with. Carefully, Fletch was trying to make individual omelets. A little business. Well, what it comes down to is that I give him money which he feeds to racehorses. Sounds like a great business. The horses like it, I guess. Get any manure in return? Nothing but. Even in daylight, the blue house is white. First thing I did this morning was run out and check. Moxie was not wearing the only dress she had brought with her. The large backyard of the blue house was completely walled. Are you ever going to tell me why it's called the blue house? Probably. But not now, right? Gotta be a little mystery in our relationship. She was squeezing orange juice. Seems we have quite a big enough mystery to deal with already. The omelet was sticking to the pan. Fletch turned down the heat. So who owns the blue house? Man named Sills, Ted Sills. Sounds vaguely familiar. Come to think of it, I met him at a party at your apartment. You did? Tall guy, beer belly, hair plastered down. Right. Sounds like everybody who comes to my parties. Trouble is, I found myself having a drink with him later, talking about investing in his racehorses. Then later spent a week with him at his horse farm, and the weekend here in Key West where I actually signed some papers. How come you're rich? Moxie asked. The phone rang. Automatically, Moxie picked it up. The Blue House, she said. Mr. Blue isn't here. Then she said, hi, Jerry. How did you know I was here? She looked across the kitchen at Fletch. It's on the news this morning? They even say the Blue House, Key West? Rats. She listened and then said to Fletch, Jerry Littleford says it was on Global Cable News at 6 o'clock last night that I had disappeared. She said into the phone, that's impossible, Jerry. I didn't disappear until 8 o'clock. She shook her head at Fletch. These reporters, she said, aren't they awful? Yeah, I know. Freddy was out on the town in Key West and spilled all. He's a very convivial man, Freddy is. She turned her back to Fletch. Sure, Jerry, sure. Sure you're not just being paranoid, Jerry? Coke does that to you, you know. Sure. Oh, okay, that would be great. She turned to Fletch. What street are we on? Duval. Duval, Moxie said into the receiver. Oh, by the way, Jerry, will you bring a script of Midsummer Night's Madness? I didn't bring one, and I'd like Fletch to read it. What's a Fletch? With dancing eyes, she looked up and down Fletch's naked body. A Fletch is a short order cook. He burns eggs in short order. See you. She hung up and went back to squeezing orange juice. That was Jerry Littleford. Wants to come down. Says the police and press are hounding him. I said, okay, lots of orange juice. In the pan, the omelet had gone limp. Fletch turned the heat up again. They had breakfast at the table on the cistern in the backyard. After Key West wakes up a little, Fletch said, I'll go down and buy you some clothes. Make a list of what you need. She nodded. These eggs are interesting, she said. Cooked in layers. Overcooked, undercooked, overcooked, undercooked, all at once. Never had eggs like these before. Hope the Lopezes will rescue us sooner or later. While Moxie was in the shower, the phone rang again. Fletch answered it. Allô? Ms. Moxie Mooney, please. This is Sergeant Frankel, Bonita Police. Ms. Oxy Hooney? No one hear that name. Goodbye. Where did Ernest Hemingway live? On the street parallel to this, Whitehead Street, Fletch answered. Great writer, no sense of humor. Moxie chalked her Q-tip. What handicap will you give me? Fletch triangled the billiard balls. Have you been playing very much? None at all. You play very well. 10 point in 100? You flatter me. 15? That would be fine, but you will beat me. Should we play for a stake? You always wish to play for a stake. I think we'd better. All right. I will give you 18 points and we will play for $1 a point. Moxie commenced to clear the billiard table. What have you been reading? Nothing, Fletch said. I'm afraid I am very dull. No, but you should read. What is there? There is the Green Hills of Africa. There is A Farewell to Arms. No, he didn't. What? He didn't say A Farewell to Arms. Then you have been reading. Yes, but nothing recent. I thought The Old Man and the Sea a very good story of acquisitiveness. I don't know about acquisitiveness. Poor boy, we none of us know about the soul. Are you quiet? At night. It became her turn again, and she pocketed 3 balls. I had expected to become more devout as I grow older, but somehow I haven't, she said. It's a great pity. Would you like to live after death? It would depend on the life. This life is very pleasant. I would like to live forever. I hope you will live forever. Thank you. Moxie pocketed the last ball. She had won. You were very kind to play, Tenente. It was a great pleasure. We will walk out together. She was putting the telephone receiver back on the cradle when he came back into the bedroom. That was Jeff McKenzie, she said. He's driving down. He called from Key Largo. Guess he was feeling woebegone. She was wearing the black dress. She looked hot. He had put on his shorts. They had heard the Lopezes come into the house. I'll go get you some clothes, he said. In the foyer of the Blue House, the Lopezes greeted Fletch. Mr. Fletcher, said Mrs. Lopez. Good to have you here again. Mr. Lopez smiled and shook hands and said nothing. Thank you for having everything so nicely arranged when we arrived last night. Mrs. Lopez took his head in her hands and kissed him. But you ate nothing. You left the sandwiches and drank none of the beer. We had something on the plane. And this morning I did not make breakfast. Someone else did. We tried to clean up our mess. I can tell. Upstairs is a young woman and her father, and I guess one or two more will be coming for lunch. We can use the sandwiches you made. I'll make something fresh. I'm going down to the stores, Fletch said. Do you want me to go with you? Lopez asked. No, Fletch said, just picking up a few things. Until later. Until later, said Mrs. Lopez. Chapter 12. When he returned, walking slowly down Duval Street in the sunlight and warm wind, his arms laden with packages, there were 2 cars with their trunks open in front of the Blue House. It had taken Fletch much longer to shop for Moxie than he had expected. Originally, there was confusion in the salesman's mind. Clearly, he wanted to think Fletch was buying this feminine clothing for himself, and clearly he wanted to play with Fletch in the process. The short, weather-beaten man Fletch had seen in the police station was unloading a small yellow car. Apparently, he had traveled alone. A large blue sedan was disgorging Edith Howell, the actress who could and did look like everybody's mother, and John Meade, who could not stop looking like a hayseed even when he wasn't being paid to do so. They had much luggage. Fletch had not been told to expect Edith Howell and John Meade. Across the street, a small group of tourists, cameras around some necks, stood in a loose group to watch and chat with each other over what they were and were not seeing. A tourist road train was crawling by on the street. The tour guide was saying through his amplifier. Blue House. In residence now in the Blue House is the actress Moxie Mooney and her father, the legendary Frederick Mooney. Now the Blue House is being used as a hideout for these celebrities who just yesterday were present when someone literally, really, truly got murdered on the Dan Buckley Show. Arrived late last night in time for old Frederick to grab a few quick ones in the local bistros. Maybe I shouldn't point out their hideout to you, but the fact that they're there is in all the morning newspapers. Coming up on your left... The front door of the Blue House was wide open. Moxie was in the dining room, stacking a tall pile of napkins. Thank God, she said, seeing the packages in Fletch's arms. I'm broiled and baked. You have more guests arriving, Fletch said. Edith Howell, John Meade. Yeah, they called from Key Marathon. Jeff McKenzie, I think. You knew he was coming. She was tearing through the packages on the dining room table. More in the backyard. Jerry Littleford and his wife. Cy Collar flew down with them. Cy Collar? We have two directors in the house? Isn't that like having two ladies wearing the same expensive dress? Moxie was holding the bottom of a yellow bikini against her black dress. I think it will fit. I just ordered for the American build. Where is everyone going to sleep? There are couches, hammocks, swings on all the balconies. Where's Oluminous One? Gone out for some conviviality. This house lacks conviviality? It's about to burst with conviviality. Moxie, my idea of getting you away for a few days... I am away. I don't need to hide out. Vexed, she was pincering all the packages from the table against her breasts. I didn't murder anybody, you know. Then we better find another suspect, said Fletch, damn quick. And it's not going to be easy to find a better suspect than you are. I'll go change. She dashed out of the dining room and headed for the stairs. You go meet the people. Fletch carried a glass of orange juice into the backyard. Jerry Littleford was the first to see him. You're a Fletch, he said. Right. I'm Jerry. He stood up to shake hands. This is my wife, Stella. Stella was the young woman who the day before had taken Marge Peterman in hand. You know Cy Collar? The heavy man in the stressed T-shirt had also been kind to Marge Peterman the day before. Today's stressed T-shirt was green. He did not rise for Fletch or offer his hand. I'm sorry, he said to Fletch. You're a cook? Jerry sat down again. Moxie only said that before she tried my omelet. Not afterwards? No, not afterwards. Everyone in the group had a Bloody Mary. I really am sorry, Collar said again. His eyes said he was sorry. Sorry for what? Fletch sat in one of the white, wrought-iron, cushioned love seats. It was cooler in the walled garden without the warm Gulf wind. For turning you down for that part. You never did. Collar looked relieved and grinned. I was sure I had. By my age, son, a director has turned down almost everybody. What have you done?
Done?
What films have you been in?
I'm not an actor.
But I've seen your work.
You saw me yesterday on Bonita Beach. I was with Marge Peterman.
Collar continued to stare at him.
Illusion and reality, Jerry Littleford said. It's an occupational hazard. Confusion between what we see and do on the screen and what we see and do in real life. What is real and what is on film?
It's a sickness of the whole society, Stella said. There's no reality for people now unless they do see it on film.
Jerry said, it's our job to make what happens on film appear more real than reality.
And sometimes, Cy Collar said, we succeed.
Was yesterday real, Stella asked, or just a segment on the Dan Buckley Show?
I don't know, Cy Collar laughed. I haven't seen it on television yet. I'll tell you after I do.
Jerry Littleford ran his eyes over the banyan tree.
Is today real?
His arm rested on the back of the love seat behind his wife's head.
Any day I'm not working, creating unreality, Cy Collar said quietly, is not real.
Yesterday, Jerry said.
Through the back door of the house came Edith Howell, Jeff McKenzie, and John Meade. Each was carrying a Bloody Mary. The Lopezes were being kept busy. Collar jumped up.
Jeff!
He tripped on the edge of the cistern, greeting McKenzie.
This is great. I've been hoping we'd get some time together. You mean before I shove off?
You were pushed off, said Collar. Something similar's happened to me, more than once. Come on into the shade.
Everyone greeted everyone else with kisses, except Mackenzie, who kissed no one. Jerry Littleford introduced Fletch.
Edith Howell acknowledged the introduction by saying, I don't know what to do with my bags, dear.
Fletch looked doubtfully at her breasts, and she sat down on a wicker chair. John Meade said,
Good afternoon. Are you our host?
I guess so. Thank you for having us.
Jeffrey Mackenzie said nothing. He did not shake hands. But looking at Fletch, his eyes clicked like the shutter of a camera's lens.
The light you got in the crow, fantastic!
Collar walked Mackenzie to two chairs at the back of the group.
Particularly in that last scene, the final scene with the old woman and the boy, how did you do it?
He laughed.
Do I have to go to Australia to get light like that?
What a dreadful drive, Edith Howell said. On that 7-mile bridge, I thought my heart would plop into the water.
Is that why you never stop talking? Meade asked with a grin.
As long as one is talking, Edith Howell said, one must be alive. Is Freddy here? She asked Fletch.
He's here somewhere. Guess he went for a walk.
My, how that man wanders, said Edith.
In the fan-backed wicker chair, instinctively, Edith Howell seemed to take over the foreground. Gangly, in a light iron chair, John Meade seemed to fill up the background. In his eager manners, in his absorbing everything around him, Jerry Littleford always looked ready to go on. The other non-professional among them, Stella Littleford, had a cute face but was small and white to the point of sallowness. The way she slumped in her chair put her very much off stage.
What a magnificent house, Edith Howell said. Looks so cool and airy. You must tell us all about Key West, she said to Fletch. How long have you lived here?
About 18 hours.
Oh.
She wrinkled her nose at the back of the house.
It's called the Blue House. Maybe the front of it's blue, I didn't notice.
It isn't, said Fletch.
John Meade laughed.
You sure are a good old boy, aren't you?
Moxie popped out the back door wearing the new yellow bikini. There were more hugs and kisses. She kissed both Cy Collar and Jeffrey Mackenzie. She sipped Fletch's orange juice.
There's no vodka in it.
There isn't.
How can you make a screwdriver without vodka? She asked.
You can't, he said. John Meade laughed. Moxie sat in the love seat beside Fletch.
Don't tell me you're all talking shop.
Stella and I were talking about fishing, Fletch said. Now that you bring it up, John Meade drawled. Cy, are we going to finish the film?
Cy looked at Moxie.
I wish I knew.
And Moxie said, That depends on the banks, doesn't it? If the bankers say we finish, we finish. If the bankers say we don't finish, we don't finish. Jumping Cow Productions.
Yeah, said Collar. That's the reality of this business, the only reality.
Littleford said,
We needed a break from filming anyway.
He rubbed his left forearm. I was getting weary of getting beat up. Give my bruises a chance to heal. The Lopezes appeared and began handing around trays of sandwiches. Edith Howell put her hand on Moxie's knee and said quietly,
I hope it was all right for us to come, dear. I suppose we were all thinking the same thing.
Moxie's eyes widened.
At a time like this, you need people around you. Friends.
Moxie stared at her open-mouthed. Have a sandwich, Fletch said. Lopez had placed the fancy beer ice cooler in the shade. Have a beer. Want me to get you a beer? Moxie didn't answer. Everyone but Moxie had a sandwich and drink in hand. The Lopezes had returned to the house. Moxie stood up. She said slowly, distinctly,
Dear friends, I did not kill Steve Peterman. Anyone who isn't sure of that fact is free to leave.
In the heavy silence, Moxie walked back to the house. She let the back door slam behind her. Stella Littleford muttered,
That would leave an empty house.
Shut up,
her husband said. He looked apologies at Fletch and at Cy Collar. Fletch cleared his throat.
Someone bumped the son of a bitch off.
Stella said,
He probably deserved it, the bastard.
I have my own theory.
Cy Collar waited for everyone's attention.
Dan Buckley.
Yeah, that's a good theory, said Fletch.
He was just as close to him as Moxie was. You're just saying that, Jerry said to Cy, because he was the only one present not... He waved a sandwich at the group under the banyan tree. Not one of us, not working with us. No, Cy Collar was munching his sandwich. I know they knew each other before. How else do you think Steve Peterman got Buckley to tape his show on location? Buckley doesn't cart himself around to every film location, you know. Fletch asked, what else do you know? Well, I know Peterman was to have dinner with Buckley to discuss business. I'm pretty sure they'd done business together. Buckley kept referring to some aluminum mine in Canada, throwing significant looks at Peterman, and Peterman kept smiling and changing the topic of conversation. That would be nice, Fletch looked at each of them. If it were Dan Buckley. Sure, Cy Collar said. Hey, tell me this. Who else could have rigged his own set? I speak as a director. He looked at Jeffrey McKenzie for confirmation. A director is responsible for everything that happens on a set. He's the only one who really understands everything on a set, what everything is for, how everything works. As a director, I say, take a simple open set like the one for the Dan Buckley show and get a knife to fall accurately enough and with enough force to get into somebody's back and kill him. Now, that's not easy. You can't rig that in 2 minutes flat. It had to be Dan Buckley. Or someone on his crew, said Mead. Did the knife fall? Asked Fletch. Collar said, I don't know. Obviously it came from somewhere with force. I was thinking about this all night. I'm sure I could rig that set to put a knife in somebody's back. Generously, he turned to Mackenzie. I'm sure Jeff here could, too. But I couldn't figure the best way to do it after thinking about it all night. Summarily, he said, I think Buckley's the only one who could have had that set primed and working for him yesterday to kill Peterman. In the digestive silence, the amplified voice of a tour guide wafted over the back wall. Mooney's famous father and famous daughter being questioned by the police regarding the murder yesterday of somebody on the set of the Dan Buckley show. The old man doesn't seem too upset. An hour ago, I saw him downtown crossing the street from Sloppy Joe's to Captain Tony's. Ah, turn it off, Mackenzie said. Makes me sick. Edith Howell again was pointing her nose at the back of the blue house. At least, she said, it's nice to get away from hotel living for a few days. Chapter 13. Fletch pushed open the door with his foot and carried the tray into his midday darkened bedroom. On the tray were a few cut sandwiches, a pitcher of orange juice, and a glass. He placed the tray on the bedside table. Moxie was an X on the bed. She had removed her bikini top. I didn't kill Steve, she said. We have to find out who did, Moxie. You're seriously implicated, or you're going to be, once the facts come out. I mean about your funny little financial dealings with Peterman. Financial dealings? I didn't even understand them. I trusted the bastard, Fletch, she groaned. Millions of dollars in debt. I know you didn't understand them. I understand you had to trust someone. Either you had to be a creative person or a business person. You had an opportunity to throw yourself 100% into your creative life, and it was good for everybody that you did. Don't judges and people like the IRS understand that sort of thing? It's not hard to understand. Not in this country, anyway. In this country, everything is a business. Being creative is a business. Except you don't have an executive staff, board of directors, business training, or experience to fall back on. That's all your fault, you see, because being creative here is really being nothing. In America, a creative person is only as good as his income. When you sign something, it signifies you understand what you're signing, and you're solely responsible for what you've signed.
But God damn it, it happens all the time. You read about it.
So, you have to protect yourself.
So Steve Peterman was supposed to protect me.
So maybe he screwed you.
And that's what happens all the time, cheese, Fletch.
Ignorance is no defense in the law, they say. More to the point, it's almost impossible to prove you didn't know what you didn't know. Playing dumb is a courtroom cliché.
Courtroom? Oh, you had to use that word, didn't you?
Sorry. He sat on the bed. Trouble is, you see, you did understand something. You arrived in Steve Peterman's office during his absence and went through his books. 2 weeks later, sitting next to you, he gets stabbed to death. There was a long silence in the darkened room. Her eyes roamed the ceiling. She sighed.
Looks bad.
Moxie, I have a friend in New York, a good friend who is both a lawyer and a certified public accountant. I believe in this person. He'll need your written permission, but I'd like him to review your books in Steve Peterman's office, so we'll know how much financial trouble you're really in. What does it matter? They're going to try me for murder. There's a chance, a small chance, you read the books all wrong, that Steve represented you well, that you have no complaints, that you had no motive to murder him. Fat chance. It's worth a shot, and if the news is bad, it's proven you did have a motive to murder him. Don't tell me. Just leave me to the execution chamber. Then at least we'll know that. We have to move fast on this. I expect the authorities will want to look at those books, too. We want to beat them to it. What do you want me to do? Sign this piece of paper. He took a paper from the pocket of his shorts and unfolded it. Giving my friend Marty Satterley permission to review your financial accounts. He took a pen from another pocket. Okay. She sat up and signed the paper on his knee. I'll call him immediately and send a messenger up to New York with your written permission.
Send a messenger to New York?
Well, there must be someone in Key West who wouldn't mind a free ride to the big city and back.
Wow, sounds like you're in the movie business.
No, Fletch said, this is serious business. She lay back on the bed. The back of her hand was on her brow.
Bunch of savages downstairs, she said.
You seemed glad enough to see them.
I never thought, until Edith gave me those pastoral eyes, they'd all think I murdered Steve. If they think I murdered someone, why are they so eager to come and stay in the same house with me?
I don't know, Fletch said. Maybe because they're friends. Moxie snorted. Well, their being here is a gesture of support.
When I want support, Moxie said, I'll buy a girdle.
No need for that yet, old thing. His hand passed over her breasts and stomach and hips. But you might work on it. He picked up the plate of sandwiches. Cream cheese and olive?
No, I just want a nap.
He put down the plate.
Orange juice?
No.
Want company?
Just want to sleep. Stop thinking, stop painin'.
Okay. Hey, Moxie, that Roz Natchman, remember who she is?
Yeah, the chief of detectives.
She's one smart, tough woman, I think. I expect we can have some faith in her.
Okay, Moxie said, if you say so.
Before Fletch opened the door, Moxie said,
Fletch?
Yeah?
What do I do about the funeral? I should go to Steve's funeral.
I don't know.
I can't stand the thought of it.
Send flowers, poison ivy. That will look good in court.
I'm thinking of Marge.
Moxie, darling, in case you haven't got the point of all my fancy dance in the last 24 hours, right now you have to think about yourself.
There was a moment's silence from the bed. Then she said,
Just now I'd like to stop thinking.